Welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People Podcast. On today's episode, we interviewed Luke Thompson, CTO at LeopardHost. During today's episode, Luke and I discussed the challenges he's faced in growing a hosting company here based in Lake Macquarie and how his company competes with some of the bigger players in that market. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People. On today's episode, we've got Luke Thompson, CTO at LeopardHost. Welcome, Luke.
Thank you, James. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem whatsoever. Mate, Lake Macquarie local?
Lake Macquarie local, down in Morisset.
Yeah, it's a part of our greater Hunter area. Mate, for those that don't know who you are and what LeopardHost does, mate, give people a bit of an overview of who you are and who is LeopardHost.
Fantastic. So I'm Luke at LeopardHost, CTO. I'd say we're a growing force in the hosting space.
Yeah.
So we're trying to emphasize quality, local, but primarily relationship building.
Yeah.
And we're focused on minimal systems that do more for businesses. And I'd say day-to-day for me is a bit of a mix. You sort of got systems engineering through general operations, but I'd say overall there's a real focus there on relationship building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Made the hosting space obviously a very crowded space. Do you consider the likes of an AWS or an Azure or a GCP a competitor to what you guys do? Or is that a different proposition? Give me a bit of an overview there.
Yeah, the trusty old public clouds. I'd say to a degree, of course, they're definitely in competition with the compute side of the business. But, you know, on the other hand, we're not in this to fight down on cost. The compute side is really important to us, but at the same time, I think once you're in a public cloud system and it's all microserviced out and everything else, you're kind of in there. So I think what we're doing is we've got a different value proposition, again, relationship-based, but at the same time, we're scaling that side up. But if somebody's gone down the route, you know, move the enterprise across, it's going to be quite difficult to look at pulling them out again.
Yeah.
So that's not overly, no, I wouldn't say.
Right, so sounds like your biggest value prop is based on customer service.
100%. Yep. Reliability, performance, but overall service. Service is key.
Mate, in that space, which is often, as you said, dollar-driven, especially for enterprise, hey, I can move to AWS and save myself X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've flipped that and gone, hey, instead of competing on price, you're going to compete on, is it availability? Is it the fact that there's somebody there to problem solve? Is that where you find most of your customers coming to you?
Yeah, I think, especially with all the acquisitions that have been happening, I think there's really something to be said for quality. In terms of reliability, we've stripped everything back, we've rebuilt everything with all the years of learning that we've had. So the systems that we run now are so rock solid for us that we can almost assume that we've got that baseline, and that really lets us focus on the relationship and adding all that value there for people.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd say overall that's where we sit, going the other way and focusing on certainly not the cheapest, but providing a lot of value.
Yeah. And is the target market for LeopardHost small, medium businesses? Is it enterprise? Is it a bit of a mix between the whole range?
I think the position that we're in now, like we're touching on before with the public clouds, I think enterprises have gone, they go down their road and they're quite happy in that space. And I think, you know, the government just awarded another contract to Amazon for however many millions for the Department of Customer Service. And we really won't go down that route. We're much more focused, I think, in the SMB world.
Yeah.
And providing value down there.
Is that also because enterprise probably have teams internally who are reasonably technically strong and can, you know, figure out most problems? I know, you know, the enterprise customers we work with have internal DevOps teams and they have people that can get within AWS to a degree as much as Amazon allows it and fix problems, whereas those smaller businesses don't have internal tech capability.
To a degree, absolutely. And I think as well, once you've kind of picked a cloud, you've certified around a cloud, there's no going back to bare bones Linux or anything along those lines.
Yeah.
So our fully managed services would take away a lot of that legwork in terms of, you know, the so-called putting out fires and building services into systems and all that sort of thing. But I think once you're there, you're there. So I don't think there's a whole lot we can do in that space short of, you know, 5 years down the track if we decide, hey, we're going to be the next Linode or DigitalOcean and flip the model back on its head again.
Yeah.
But I don't really see the value in going down that path.
So you'd be more of a service-based industry or a service-based company rather than a product-focused company.
Absolutely.
Yeah, nice. Am I right in thinking that Leopard Hose came out of consultancy?
Yeah, we've done sort of almost the full circle now in IT. So we've gone from the world of web application development, so working with Red Rooster, working with Mercedes-Benz, working with the Diamondbacks over in the States, through to the MSP model, all the while we still, from the web design days, had built out these Linux platforms that we were leasing out and sort of building up that sort of engineering compute side, and then tied that into an MSP model where we ran a brand called Newcastle IT. We scaled that up locally, and that was humming along alongside the hosting compute right around the time this lovely spicy flu pitched up and caused so much havoc. And that's when we sort of sat down and went, look, we've always had the hosting compute. We reckon that we've got it to a point now where we've ironed it out. We love how it all runs. Let's take the chance to forge deeper relationships like Data Center and AppNic and all that sort of thing and rebuild upwards and then just focus down that pathway.
So more of a niche offering as opposed to probably a broader offering in the MSP world.
Yeah, I think the MSP world was fantastic. We had a lot of fun. We did some great projects and we had some brilliant clients. But you get to a point where I think as well with the model shifting these days, you look at the likes of Microsoft 365 and now they're tossing in Intune, and now, you know, an office manager is also running authentication and security and all sorts of things. To provide value in the MSP world, you've really had to evolve quite quickly and things can change within weeks with not a whole lot of notice. So for us, I think it made more sense that we've always had this hosting on the side. Why not take it a step further and build that out and focus on what we'd learned over the years of working with the enterprises through to the MSP side with project management, vendors, trades, connectivity, all that sort of thing. It ties a lot of it in with what we do now. And having had that experience with the app dev and all that sort of thing, if we were going to a medium-sized company, if we're going into an agency, a dev house, and saying, hey, here's what we do. Oh, by the way, we've also got quite a unique perspective from everything that's got us to here.
Yep.
Oh, it's been pretty good.
Nice, mate. How big's the team now?
We're a team of three, so we keep it nice and lean.
Yeah.
So when we get to the point of saying we need to put somebody on, that's when we will review our code and go, we can actually automate 4 hours a week here away. And so we'll get rid of that. But we're sitting at the point now where we need to hire at the end of the year and we need to hire at the end of the financial year as well coming.
Yeah.
But we've just been approved. It's really exciting for an R&D project.
Yeah.
So some of our software plans that are on the board, we've got a really fantastic partner down in Victoria. So we're going down that pathway, but we need to be putting on the developers / engineers to start to flesh those out and get us down the road and up and away.
So it sounds like focus, continual focus in the hosting, but then there'll be some tangent projects on top.
Yeah, I think what's made it really enjoyable for us is that we don't stop listening, nor moving, nor innovating. So we were looking at our tech stack a while ago and we'd built everything out on VMware. We'd built switching out to a very basic level. We were routing through a different company, colo through a different company. And that's where we sort of went, we need to make a really hard decision here. We need to break away from VMware. We need to go KVM. We need to go down more of a FOSS route. You know, what are we actually operating? Can we expand it? Can we integrate with it? Can we automate? What can we do? So in rebuilding all of that and going direct with the DC and all the rest of it, we're now at a point where we've got so much flexibility, you know, sort of inherently in what we've built, that the road just sort of keeps opening up.
Yeah.
So not just in terms of, well, what else can we start to provide, but certainly in terms of, well, we can scale that really easily. We can add more value here really easily. And then with reporting with bigger clients and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Quite a nice pace of growth. We don't want to scream up and away, but at the same time, you know, we're quite happy with the pace that we're going and just picking things up nice and consistently and getting the word out there is what it's all about.
And getting our word out. Let's play down that route a little bit. Newcastle, or Lake Mac, Greater Hunter.
Yeah.
How have you found building a business, you know, in this area?
That's a broad question. It's a beautiful area. So, I mean, having grown up, you know, down the coast a bit, but still by the water, always in love with the water, I think, and having family up this way as well, we've always been drawn up. So once we moved up, you definitely start to realize there's a bit of resistance to getting in the door. There's a bit of, you know, prove yourself before kind of anything starts to happen. But having been up here now for, you know, years and years at this point, I'd say the biggest things would be now that we're in the hosting space, we've definitely heard, you know, more than a few stories of, I think, a couple of providers that did like a pseudo hosting solution and might not have had all of the follow through. So there's a little bit of resistance there in terms of, well, last time we trusted, we probably shouldn't have trusted, so why should we trust in you? Yeah. But at the same time, it's not all negative, because once you start to get the name out there, you forge these relationships, yeah, like, you know, the rest is almost history.
Yeah.
Newy tech people's taking off.
We're doing okay. my opinion on Newcastle in particular, I think it's definitely more relationship driven. Yes. Than any of the bigger markets. From a recruitment perspective, Sydney's a massive market, obviously, significantly bigger recruitment market than Newcastle.
Huge.
But I feel like it's definitely more transactional than relationship driven, whereas Newcastle said it takes more time to earn the trust or to ingrain yourself within the community. But 100%. Once you've done that, the relationships are deeper.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, once you've earned that trust, you'll get opportunities and you'll get support of the community.
100%.
How have you found that from a business perspective? Do you think it's an advantage or it's a challenge or it's a bit of both?
I'd say it's a bit of both. I think overall it pays off. If you look at the bigger picture, I think it's not so much that you're having to do more to start a relationship. I think it's more the case that what you've done over with one client will inadvertently help you with another client. You'll look after somebody as part of what you do, the same as what NTP are always doing. And then you'll end up running into somebody and saying, hey, we could work together. I know all about you. We don't need to talk about that. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Oh, I didn't think about that. But of course, there's already that link. So in that sense, it's really good. But it makes the relationships more valuable, I think, overall. And I think, yeah, the clients that we have up here, for the most part, we can see them being clients in 5 years, 10 years' time. There's no hesitation there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what I'm saying with that. You go and meet with them and it's like you've been with them already for too long.
Yeah, well, it seems like your, I guess, value prop or the way you've operated your business, definitely that more service focus where it's building a relationship, it's understanding what the client really needs and then, you know, value or providing the value to them.
Yeah.
Rather than a one-off transaction or, hey, I can find you online, find out what your price point is and, you know, sign up online. It's more of a consultative type approach.
I'd say... Yeah, look, for the average, for a managed client that we're putting on board, they pretty much, they're not, they could, but they're not just jumping on and going, hey, I've got blah, blah, and blah, let's get going. It's much more, hey, I'd love to forge a relationship. Could we have a conversation? It's always best for us to do what we'd almost call a discovery, where we start to map out who you are, how you're doing it, what your challenges are, and then start to sort of step back a little bit, go, well, we know that this is what you're after. But have you considered that maybe making a few tweaks here, even over 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, could start to help expand what you're doing, how you're doing it, and for them, profitability-wise, start to really ramp up their operations, especially in the hosting space?
Yeah, I think it sounds like a bit of a different approach to, you know, the hosting, especially at an enterprise level. Obviously, that's about costs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've got a lot of clients that go down an AWS route because not only do you obviously get the hosting, but all the different, you know, products within AWS, they got a really strong offering these days, right?
They sure do. They're launching something every other month.
Yeah. But, you know, that's not for everyone, as you said, and a lot of people need maybe a handheld or, as you just may mention there, it's not only a hosting conversation, but it's a business conversation on, you know, what services can you provide to help their profitability?
Exactly. There's a lot of value that we can provide there. So in terms of automation, in terms of productivity, and just thinking outside the box, you know, you might have done something one way for 5 years, 10 years, but in what we're doing, a lot has changed in 5 years, 10 years. You know, not just in terms of companies and acquisitions and their value props evolving, you know, sort of falling into bigger umbrellas and dropping down on costs and all the rest of it, But I think especially when you're looking at if a company is running, you know, a couple of hundred different client sites, there's more now to be said for a provider that can say, look, we can take away all the hassle of actually supporting that. If you want to keep the relationships 100%. But if you just want to white label help and to have them be able to get past you while retaining them as a client, we can do that as well.
Yeah. The hosting space has changed quite a bit over the past 5 to 10 years, obviously, with the three big players, right? Microsoft, AWS, and then Google. Have you got any opinions? Are you brave enough to make a call on what the next 5 years looks like in that hosting space?
Look, with the number of acquisitions that we're seeing now, even just in a regular hosting space, you know, like the umbrella that, say, for example, Crazy Domains are under with Newfold Digital, is such a wide umbrella now and encompasses brands that you would still think are Australian-owned brands, but they haven't been for years and years and years. So I think we're going to see more of that. And I think what we're already seeing, and we'll just see more of, is smaller players starting up, you know, carving out their niche, but quite quickly then saying, I can't do it. It's too competitive. I can't get enough traffic in the door. Why should I be doing this?
Yeah.
You know? And then a convenient knock on the door. Would you sell out for blah? Oh, okay. That's my ticket. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see more of that scaling up and transitioning. And yeah, with the likes of Net Registry having lifted and shifted their own hosting to Amazon, they don't even be wanting to run the data centers, the servers, the infrastructure these days. So there's something to be said for a host that are, I don't want to say grassroots, but
independent.
Yeah, and keeping it sort of true to form with what hosting is all about and what compute and solutions are meant to do for businesses.
How does that play out for Leopard Host over a five-year period? Where would you like Leopard Host to be? Is it a grow and an acquisition, or is it a grow and an exit for you guys? Do you have any thoughts? You like to say independent and, you know, stay at a more service orientated business?
The service and the relationships, honestly, number one for us is the relationships.
Yeah.
I think when you forge high quality partnerships, yeah, you'll be with that client for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about racing for us, but I think the stability and the strength of the growth is most important for us. So they've been running now as a PL company for 5.5, 6 years. We've learned a lot. We've evolved a lot. We've always had the hosting operating in that time when we went down the MSP route and the dev route and all that sort of thing. So I think now that we're at a point, we're mature in terms of the systems. They're built out, like I said before, they're reliable. Yeah, we're loving how it works. Everything can talk to everything and there's flexibility everywhere. I think for us, it's a case of just keep consistently scaling up and getting the word out there and probably forging more diversity around the partnerships, so delivering more value. I think what we're seeing now is so many businesses just give up on the traditional hosting, in inverted quotations, and will shift over to a flywheel, to a Kinsta, to a company that says, we will take your problems away.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of half going down that road with the other half focusing on the relationship. And a lot's possible.
Yeah.
So growth really for us. There's no exit plan. There's no American superhero acquisition plan. But yeah, there's a lot of people out there that have made promises, but we're happy, and family owned carbon negative company is what we're all about.
Talk about that carbon angle. Where did that come from?
It's really important. Yeah, we've got 2 young kids. I've got a 4.5-year-old. I've got somehow a 7-month-old. It feels like it was just yesterday at John Hunter.
Yeah.
And I think there's not enough focus on tomorrow. So I think for us, it's about doing good today with what we do. But with the number of kilowatts that we're always pulling, it's important for us to make sure that we're not just offsetting that, but we're trying to do something in return as well. So in terms of data center space, we like to keep it at tier 4 where we can, so sort of best of the best. And thankfully, with NextDC, and we're mostly in their S2 down in Macquarie Park in Sydney, we're trying to get out of Sydney, but it's a bit tricky at the moment, still up here. They've built out a platform called Next Neutral, which is tied in with Carbon Neutral. And we're able to opt in and automatically, you know, adds on every month what we need to pay to offset the tonnage that we're putting out. And from there on the you know, taking it from neutral to negative, I think it's easy to say positive because it sounds like a good word, but it means the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So we're taking it to a negative view. We've then got the setup with Strike Climate.
Yeah.
That 2% of all of Lepidote's card revenue gets pumped into Strike Climate, and that goes into their, you know, carbon reduction storage plans that they're enacting.
Yeah.
And that's the difference for us going from neutral to negative and actually making a difference.
Nice.
Yeah.
And just came from, I guess, from your internal, hey, I've got a family, I've got kids, I want to make, yeah, you know, I look after the environment for them.
Yeah, we are pulling crazy amounts of power. So it's, we're naturally putting out pollution. So it's really important for us that we're not just undoing it, but we're trying to go further than that.
Nice. Yeah. So that's something you actively promote.
100%.
Yeah. It sounds like it's definitely not a sales angle for you, but it's actually somewhere it comes from a genuine place. But it is a nice, it's a nice angle. It's something to think about.
I think there's a lot of value to it.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, it doesn't seem all that significant, but I think if every host and cloud provider operating in this country just did it by default, we'd be in a better place.
Yeah, nice. Mate, obviously, to get to a CTO, it sounds like it's beyond a CTO. It's a CTO plus you play the relationship management part. So there's a technical aspect and a more relationship aspect to it, yeah, as well as a BD aspect, as well as an operational aspect, I guess, to what you do.
Oh, it's hands on.
Yeah. Mate, how did your career grow from you know, early days into where you are at now?
There has been so much learning. It's, yeah, a lot of evolution. I think working with everybody from, you know, a sole trader on day one and trying to map things out for them to having spent time at a computer store with people walking in the door and, you know, sort of back in Macquarie Uni days and, you know, sort of mapping out how that looks and where that could go and then getting into dev and bigger clients and different needs and 11th hour changes and, you know, managing devs, managing engineers across to the MSP side where anything can change in a heartbeat. You can put all the precautions in place, but you can still have, you know, sudden chaos when somebody in the office clicks a link, punches in details, ignores the warnings and goes, I may have caused a problem here. So I think all of the different avenues that we've been down while focusing still on this hosting side has led me to have a really good viewpoint over not just where we are and where we're heading, you know, sort of 2 to 5 year plan, but I think more so the voyage along the way. I think the context really helps. And I think having all that experience really helps.
So you get a role, it's CTO, obviously CTO, and the word CTO can be different at different companies. It's always looked upon differently.
Oh yeah.
But it sounds like you haven't played a specialist route by any means, but more so you've gone for breadth of opportunity or breadth of experience that's led you to get to where you're at now.
I think tweak and refine.
Yeah.
Lots of adjusting, lots of reviewing, and not being afraid to say, not sure this is the right fit for us.
Yeah.
In terms of the systems engineering side, there's been Linux in my blood, I think, for well over 10 years.
Yeah.
So that was always going to play a part. It had to play a part. I think the MSP side was very Windows-based and was a bit of a case of, this is great, and you know we can do this, and this can grow, but are we enjoying this? And more importantly, am I loving this every day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting up, is it a case of, fantastic, I can't wait? And now where we are, I think it's a real case of that is there and that's really motivating. You know, keeping eyes open and keeping on growing has been fantastic.
Very nice. So one of the questions we ask pretty much every episode of the New Tech People podcast is people's thoughts on education and education on whether that contributed to where they're at in their career.
Yeah.
I noticed you started university, deferred university.
Sure did.
Can you give us any background insights, thoughts around that?
I think university is fantastic in a lot of different applications. It's kind of similar to, I guess, going down the TAFE route as well. But staying on the uni train, I think it was pretty clear by about that sort of 1 to 1.5 year mark of, you know, tying into Microsoft databases and tying into sort of business analysis at a higher level and where it was going. I was ready to get hands-on.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, sort of sitting idle and being held back and, you know, what am I doing here? Is this really going to help me? Am I really going to need this at the end of it?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think there's still a lot of merit to it.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, that was back 2013, 14 era, sort of in that weird transitional phase for IT degrees, where I think the content was five-ish years before. A lot was starting to happen, and we're sitting here now in 2022, and it's a real case of so much is evolving. Every month something is rapidly unfolding in front of us. So I think I've got no regrets in deferring. I'd look at going back at some point in the future in more of a leisure almost capacity to kind of say I've ticked that box off.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't think it was for me, and I'm pretty happy with the deferral.
Yeah, cool. There are, yeah, as you said, things change so quickly now. Education is one of those things.
Yeah.
There's so much free content available online. There's so many short courses. A lot of the big industry players have their own certifications. Is there any other parts of education that you've undertaken yourself that you think, oh, that's super valuable?
Like you say, there's so much online. I think you could almost argue that there's too much online. You know, sort of finding what you need to find can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but it's an industry with so many prongs coming out from it. Really depends what you're getting into, but then you've got the other side where you've got, if you're going in for a role, that company might say, well, if you don't have anything tertiary, we really don't want to have a conversation with you.
I think that's happening less frequently now.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. I feel like the job advertisements or the role descriptions say, is a degree is necessary? Is it changing beats, especially in a talent short market like we are now?
Desirable.
Yeah, it's desirable. And I guess the vast, if you had to make a generalization around thoughts on university, I think the generalization is university, especially in technology, university teaches you a really good theoretical base, yeah, of which you can build upon.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of managers out there that have done a degree and thought, and their experience was taught a really good fundamental base of which to build upon. And that is still valuable.
Yes.
And then you've got to stay relevant with, you know, your short courses or just learning new skills consistently. The degree doesn't, you know, stay relevant. And I feel like that's, if I had to have a mass generalization, that is the general thought.
Yeah.
It's not everyone's thought, but that is, a general generalization. And I agree. My university degree, I thought, was solid theoretical knowledge, but I probably learned more in the first 3 months out of university than I did in 3 years in university.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely in the technology space, there's so many niche subjects and skills to be learned that you can learn either for free online or for some pretty cheap online short courses from some of the best people in the world.
Some of them are absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I think as well, if you're – yeah, say, for example, going down a networking route, whether it's engineering or security or anything else, I think not only have you got options there like TAFE, sort of networking in general, but I think specifically what people want these days is a mixture of hands-on experience,
yeah,
which doesn't always have to actually be in a corporate or enterprise world. It can just be, have you built, you know, a kick-ass home lab? What can it do? Right. How have you done it? Why did you do it that way?
Especially in your space.
100%. As well as on the other side, if you're going into a company, you know, again, in that networking realm, it's a case of, well, you've always worked on Cisco Kit. Have you ever touched Juniper? Do you have certificates in Juniper? And then it's a case of, okay, well, because you've done a lot there, you get the fundamentals. So we're happy with that.
Yeah.
But we're probably going to say, we really like you. We like your approach. How can you handle yourself in a crisis? You know, how would you tackle a P1 occurring right in front of you? And you're assigned to manage the team that's responsible for that at the minute. I guess the hands-on side and the management side has more value, arguably, than, oh, but you don't have the TAFE certificate. You know, you don't have the brand certifications type of thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think the other part to your company in particular, being a service-based business and not just a product-based business, the technical skills are probably half the battle.
Yeah.
That liaising with clients, working with customers, it's not exactly sales, it's just customer service, really. That ability to have communication, the ability to sort of liaise, understand what people's problems are.
Expectation management.
Yeah, all as big as the actual technical skills in fixing a problem, right?
Absolutely. Especially when it's also reliable. I think the technical side doesn't dwindle away, but I think it's when it's so rock solid, you need to be focusing on what you're delivering and how you're delivering it.
Yeah. From that educational part, obviously there's less formal education. It comes from readings, books, podcasts, anything like that. Is there any of your blogs? Is there any go-to spaces for you and, you know, you staying abreast of what's happening in the industry?
It's a real mix. I think at this point now, depending on what it is, you know, if it's people on LinkedIn, there's probably, you know, a handful of people putting out relevant, really interesting content that's been really good for us.
Any people in particular you'd like to shout out?
In terms of the shout out side, I think it's, we're sort of back to the industry of mini industries. You know, in our sort of mini industry, you've got people like Pavel at FastNetMon, sort of like DDoS detection and disruption sort of package, which ties into a lot of almost pseudo network engineering sort of works. So there's always fascinating tools, there's cheat sheets, there's explanations that you might not have been thinking about. You've then got people like Bevan Slattery, who set up NextDC, who set up Superloop, CloudScene, and he's now doing the NBN competitor Hyper One. Random content, all sorts of bits and pieces, but things that you just wouldn't otherwise stumble upon.
Yeah.
And I'm struggling to think of his surname, but there's a guy called Louis that's now a technical editor at GitHub.
Yeah.
And since he's jumped in there and he's sort of getting his hands dirty with this and over here and in Python that and all the rest of it, the content that he puts out by coincidence is really fascinating to keep an eye on. But I think part of it for us, a lot of it is depending on what we're operating, like the vendors, the patches, you know, CVEs and that sort of thing. A lot of it is RSS monitoring, even though it's 2022.
Yeah.
It's still pretty current for us. So keeping abreast of what's happening, and it sounds so simple, you know, in the cyberspace, but keeping everything up to date has a lot of value.
Yeah.
A lot of those basic things. But other than that, I'd sort of say I've got some long-term loves, if you will, in that world, which would be a mix of Ars Technica, Slashdot, and places like Hacker News.
Yeah.
All those good places, general information, but you can deep dive enough. And then if you're really feeling a bit keen, if you delve into the comment section, that's where the real dialogue happens.
Yeah. I think those, you know, bigger publishing places, publishing houses, if you go there and you use that to stay abreast at a higher level, and then you find something of interest, then you can deep dive off-site with one of those subjects or in the comments. 100%. I feel like they're good to stay abreast, right?
And you start to pick out who's writing what, and you almost start to follow people by the articles that they're pushing out.
Nice, mate. Obviously, your role, CTO, plus. it sounds like a pretty big role. One of the other questions we like to ask quite frequently here is just, how do you manage your day? Is there any productivity solutions that you use, any tools, any frameworks that you use to set out your day or your week?
We have been all over the world in terms of productivity. It's, yeah, number one for us and almost feels like the glue in the company is, of course, Slack.
Yeah.
Everybody runs Slack, so it's not going to be a massive wow. But one thing that we've been trying to do is reduce our dependence on Jira.
Yeah.
And so as part of that, it's not quite the same solution, but what we've found is trying to find a mix of calendaring, diarization against task list, against notes, with sort of a color-based mapping system. We've landed on one called TickTick that's been quite good for us. So in terms of the productivity side, but I'd say then at that point, you're tying into the other side of that has been things like GitHub issues has been good for us. So moving from keeping it project-based in Jira to keeping it repository-based in GitHub has been fantastic. But overall, pseudo-productivity, I think 1Password for us is phenomenal in terms of being able to share fine-grained levels of access, the audit logging abilities, and keeping all of that safe. You know, we've got 2FA and all that sort of stuff, of course, but to draw it back, if you're doing a comparison of something like LastPass against 1Password, quite happy and confident over here, whereas wouldn't be quite as much over there, and just less friction. It lets us know that it's got our back.
Excuse my ignorance, but the difference between those two, when you mentioned
LastPass and 1Password. Without getting too anti-LastPass, anti-LogMeIn, I think we prefer a password manager that's not getting compromised all the time. That's certainly number one. 1Password is just built really smoothly. Yeah, if you jump into LastPass, it looks like it looked, you know, 5-10 years ago. It is a stale piece of software. And I think they're going down the road now of trying to remove password and go passwordless, which is a great push overall with biometrics and all the rest of it. But I'm not sure it's the company to be doing it. Whereas when 1Password come to the point of saying, hey, you've got this additional option, whether you want to add a YubiKey or something physical, or whether you want to go another way. We just trust almost by default that they've got it right the first time, which is really, I think, a fantastic way to try and approach business. There's no friction there. Clean, quick, reliable.
Yeah, frictionless is, you know, the way all software is going, right? If you can remove friction for people or your customers, you're a long way to succeed.
Happy days.
Yeah. is there any other pieces of advice? Well, let's go piece of advice for, a younger version of yourself. So back to, you know, younger Luke starting out to where you are now. Is there any one key piece of advice you think that's helped you get to from where you were to where you are now?
I'll tell you what, it's a good question. I think the key thing would probably be to understand really early on that one of the most significant fundamentals of business is that you're never really there. It's all about the voyage every week, every month, every year. Things are always changing. Things are always growing. And not being afraid to go, this isn't quite right. And we need to not so much cut the losses as much as it's okay for us to pull back from that, shift over here. Perfect. You know, that's more of the dream run type of thing. So I'd say that's probably key in terms of anything else. I'm back to it being a pretty good question, really.
No, I like it. I really like that. I think, and I agree. I feel like there isn't one only way of doing things. It's always varied paths. And sometimes what might look like the best path when you're looking out and might not be the best path in reality. And even if it is, it's not the best path isn't, you know, always manageable. Sometimes, you know, you can't get the best way. Sometimes you've got to go a detour. Yeah. And sometimes that detour leaves you in a better place. So, no, I think it's good advice because it's something you just learn over time, right?
Absolutely. I think as well the amount of time that we invest now compared to when we started in, I mean, it's the classic adage of measure twice and cut once. Most of our major projects, systems, networking projects, 80, 90% of the time is spent in the planning phase. And that means for us, the implementation phase is on average incredibly successful. And again, back to frictionless. So documentation and planning is brilliant. And over the years, all that's happened is we've spent more time and energy on that side and reaping the rewards of spending all that time mapping it out. And like you're saying, not just always going, that's what we need, but stepping back and going, fairly sure it's what we need, but let's question that thought process and strip it back and make sure we get there again.
Yeah, it probably ties into what you mentioned earlier today around those discovery meetings with your clients as well and how you approach that. It sounds like the way you approach your individual projects and how you approach life really ties in really closely with how you approach working with your clients with, you know, big discovery, planning piece up front, understand your problem.
Absolutely.
Oh, mate, I like that. I think that's a really nice way to finish, actually.
Pays off every time.
Those that might not know who you are or might have some questions on anything that you've mentioned today, what's the easiest, best way for people to get in contact with you?
I think number one is always LinkedIn.
Yeah.
For me, I'm a big fan of a traditional phone call. Yeah. There's something to be said about voice-to-voice type of thing, person-to-person.
Your phone details on your LinkedIn page?
Absolutely. Everything's on there. New is Slack as well.
New Luke Thompson with a little purple background, right?
A purple and orange background. You can't miss it. In the new is Slack as well, but yeah, phone call, LinkedIn, Slack, it all works.
Yeah, nice. I appreciate your time.
No, thank you. Likewise, great to be here.
Cheers. Thank you for listening to this episode of New Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.newitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.